Let's spread a song so you can sing along with a special guest or two.
Or two.
You like to sing and dance, and this podcast, by chance, explores musicals for you. Theme Song, yeah!
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Life's But a Song's Second Chance Theater, where we recover a topic but with a new guest. I'm your host, John, and with me today is the redhead of the pod. It's Ariana Armand, everyone. Woo! How are you doing?
I'm okay.
Good.
It's been a week.
As of this recording, it's been a week. And I'm pretty sure by the time it comes out, it'll still be a week. But we're here today to recover the 1982 classique film, Annie. The 1982 version,
yes,
was previously episode 222 with guests Sam Smith, Matan Shahar, and bestie of the pod, Jason Kerr. This is now the fourth time we're doing Annie on this podcast. But only the first second chance of it, so.
There we go. Well, because we're not doing second chance of that 2014 thing.
I mean, it's totally bonkers and out there.
I've never seen it. I can't bring myself, like, the previews came out for that, and I went, absolutely not.
I mean, watching this, they did a pretty good adaptation of it, because they mm-hmm. follow the similar things. Like, they go to the movies, there is a helicopter chase at the end, which I thought was special to the 2014 one. I forgot that it happened in this one. They got rid of Punjab and the Asp.
Okay, but look, Punjab was everything to me when I first saw this movie. Like, I love Punjab.
Really?
I was 4 years old, first
okay.
of all.
Okay, right. You're right. And you probably
and
were like,
it was a very
magic.
Different time. Yes, he was like magic, and he had this cool voice.
Mm.
You know, because I've always been like very sound oriented, and like cool voices like that. Like, I love that.
I was thinking during this rewatch of this movie that Punjab and the Asp sounds like a great band name.
Yes, it
and
does
that's
actually.
It.
let's copyright that now. I mean, they were original characters in the comic strip.
Yes. Yeah.
They are not in the stage production.
The only ones I saw that were from the comic strips are Annie, Daddy Warbucks, Sandy, Punjab, and the Asp.
Yeah.
I believe that's it.
Yeah, no, I was reading up on the comic strip this morning, just because I don't know that much about the comic strip. And it was really interesting.
Yeah, well,
did you know there was a Mrs. Warbucks who was kind of the Miss Hannigan character?
What? Well, there was a Miss Hannigan character, but she was named Miss Asthma or something like
Miss
that.
Miss Asthma and then Miss Treat. There were two.
Oh, interesting.
And apparently it was Mrs. Warbucks who did the whole we're bringing an orphan in for a week, but she was like mean and terrible. And then Daddy Warbucks was away when that happened, and then he came in and like immediately was like, oh, we have a little girl, and was like paternal, and then like this apparently a lot of the plot, especially like early in this in the comic strip series, was like Daddy Warbucks would go away for business or whatever, and then Mrs. Warbucks would like try and send Annie back to the orphanage.
Ooh.
Yeah,
wow, okay.
Yeah. She was like nouveau riche, and she was a plumber's daughter, and like this is all stuff I just learned this morning.
I also learned this morning that apparently, originally they wanted it to be Little Orphan Otto.
Yeah,
and then they changed it to Annie based off of a poem. So, like watching this movie, when he says orphans are boys, I was like, are you making reference to this? I hope that's what this is.
Right.
We have a whole other conversation to have.
Right.
Mr. Warbucks.
No, I think that's kind of a single bachelor misogynistic view of the world.
Well, yes, but
You
I
know?
for the character to say the words that the writer is
Right.
writing, I'm hoping that the writer is making reference.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. But yeah,
Yeah.
I don't know if that was a reference or if that was just this is how men think.
Well, may, a little column A, a little column B.
There you go.
But Ariana, why did you want to recover this movie?
So this is, I was 4 years old when this movie came out. This is the very first movie I remember seeing in a movie theater. Like I saw it right when it came out.
Oh, wow.
I was obsessed. Like my family had to call me Annie for weeks.
Was this, to your recollection, was this the first musical movie you've seen?
I don't think so, because my mom was always into like the older movie musicals and that kind of thing, and so if they were on TV, we would watch them. I don't necessarily remember what the
Well,
first
maybe.
one was, but I this would definitely be the, like the first one that like really stuck with me.
Was and it was probably because it was a girl, a little
Yeah,
girl.
it was a little girl who was, I mean, you know, 6 years older than me and had red hair. I was like a strawberry blonde.
But you were like, "Hey, child actor, I who's leading, I can do that too."
Right.
And lo and behold,
And lo and
here
behold, I drove
we
everybody
are.
crazy, you know. And I have very specific memories about like that day.
Oh.
Yeah, no, so like I know we went, it was like my sister had recently been born, like my mom was still breastfeeding. Like I have visions of my mom sitting next to me in the movie theater with a blanket over herself, breastfeeding my sister, which I'm sure, you know, is great.
I
And my
mean,
cousin, yeah, I you
power
know,
to
like
her.
these are just like the things that I remember. And like my cousins came with us and my grandmother. My grandfather was a paraplegic and in a wheelchair, so he didn't go to a lot of things with us. And I remember coming home from the movie, and we went to Grandma and Grandpa's house after the movie. And I was so caught up in this thing. And like, I went to my grandpa was the best. And I was explaining the movie to him and telling him the plot. And I made him act it out with me. I'm like, you're Daddy Warbucks. And I just came here. But you're mad because you wanted a little boy. And like, I went and like, I hid around the corner of the wall. And my grandpa's like playing along and he's like, I wanted a boy. I wanted a boy with black hair. And he's just like going off.
I'm so glad nothing's changed in your life.
Nothing has changed in my life.
Maybe the hair color,
Maybe
but
yeah, the hair color a little bit, but it's always been some shade of red. Except that brief period where I was blonde and we're not going back there.
we don't talk about it.
No.
But let's talk about, I mean, you got a chance to listen to the first chance
I
of this?
did. I did. And there's a few things that I need to correct.
Go ahead. This is your moment.
So first of all, I'm like this is like meaningless. This is it was not Pepsi that Jeffrey Holder was promoting. It was 7 Up.
What?
So Jason was talking about how like after Annie, Jeffrey Holder had this series of commercials and he was like doing really well and that kind of
Oh,
thing,
got
and he
it.
said it was Pepsi. But no, it was 7 Up because the whole point was it was the Uncola, and it was.
Bless her heart, she's old.
I
Like,
know, it's okay. It's okay.
and I hope she's listening to this episode. It's gonna be great. I'm gonna.
And of course, like so, then like Jeffrey Holder was like the first person I ever recognized as like a celebrity in a commercial series because he was Punjab, so.
Right.
So there's
You
like that connection for me.
didn't learn of the diva that is Bernadette Peters.
I did learn of the diva that is Bernadette Peters at in the, yeah, this was my first exposure to Bernadette, to Tim Curry. We watched the Carol Burnett show, so I was familiar with her.
Okay.
But yeah, this was like, yeah, and I mean, of course, you know, Anne Reinking, and you know, this was like my first exposure to all of that.
I was thinking while watching this that I think they wrote We Got Annie just for her.
Oh,
She's
I
like,
mean,
she's probably
yeah.
like, can I dance?
I was like, I'm
Can I
sorry,
do my thing?
We have this amazing, brilliant Fosse dancer, and I mean, she's done some dancing to this point.
Where everyone is like, I mean, I said this in the first chance as well, where Aileen Quinn, you could tell, has a moment of just like, I'm not,
Yeah,
we're
that's
not
during Let's Go
duetting.
to the Movies, I watched for that after I heard you say that, because I wasn't,
Okay, yeah, I
yeah, because
was
I hadn't caught
wrong.
that before.
I thought it was, I think I'm gonna like it here, but
Yeah,
it's
there's
Let's Go
like,
to the
yeah, there's some point in Let's Go to the Movies, right before she goes to stand behind Anne Reinking and does that like kind of arm thing, where you kind of see her face go, ah, maybe just go back here.
where she's just like, no.
No. Like, well, I'm kind of doing it, but I'm just gonna hide behind her now.
Yeah. And like, yes, this is the story of Annie, and yes, she's playing the lead, but at least she was a good performer to know, not my strength.
Yeah.
We're not gonna diva out on this one. We're
Like
gonna like
I've seen like some behind the scenes things about the movie and about her. I mean, apparently like she was just like a very dedicated like she wanted to be a performer, and like she was taking the dance classes, and she was really working hard to do everything
Aileen
right. Yeah,
was, yeah.
Aileen.
So watching this, I don't know if you but I have talked about this. I have a thing against kids in movies
Oh
or
no,
child
we've talked
actors.
about this.
Yeah,
We've
okay,
talked about, because we've dealt with, Love Never Dies.
Right. But in this one, they're doing a specific style of acting, I feel like. Where, I mean, even Albert Finney and Ryan, even the adults are doing a specific style of like caricature-y, cartoonish.
Yeah, it's a little bigger.
It's a little over the top.
Yeah. It's more theatrical.
But really, it's the other girls that kind of irk me, but not Aileen. And I was like, why did she win a Razzie for this?
Because
The Razzies, I know, are
movies
bitter people. I get
well, I
that.
mean, there's that, and there's also like movies like this are not made for the people who review movies. And that's what happens, like anytime, like any kind of like kids movie, animated film, the people who write reviews and are critics kind of act like they're above it. And it's like, yeah, this wasn't made for you, and you kind of need to look at it and review it as the audience that it was made for. Instead of being like, well, I mean, it's
You're right.
childish. Yes, it's childish. It's not for you.
It's like, do you not see who the leading actor is? Leading character is? Are you familiar with the stage version?
Yes, I actually saw it the last time it was revived here, in, well, was that 2011, I think. I was
The
right.
one with Jane Lynch?
Yes, but I didn't see Jane Lynch. I saw it before she went in. I saw it with I really wanted to go see it with Jane Lynch, and I just didn't manage. So I saw it with Katie Finneran, and I mean, I mainly went because Anthony Warlow was Daddy Warbucks, and when are we ever going to get to see Anthony Warlow in the States?
So what did you think of the the movie is first in your life, and then you've seen productions of the stage version. I'm assuming more than just the recent
Yeah.
one.
I mean I remember seeing like a regional theater production of it when I was maybe 8 or 9.
So what do you think of the changes that were made for the movie?
I think the changes for the movie are good, because I think it works better in that medium than doing a straight across adaptation. Now, I have been taken to task by Martin Sharnan's daughter on a Facebook group that I'm in when I said something positive about the film, and she completely came in and ripped me apart because it was not what her father wanted. It was, the creators of the stage production didn't really care for the film because it's not what they did. And And it really kind of like the way she went about it was just like, no, the movie is absolutely terrible and it's awful and it's not what my father wanted in this whole. And it really bothered me that she took that approach with me, who was coming on and saying, you know, and I think I said, you know, this is the first movie I remember seeing. I was 4 years old. It's probably a very big reason why I do what I do. And I look back at, you know, how I deal with the Phantom film and how it irks me that people think that is like the end all and be all. And I can find good things about that movie, and I appreciate it because it did bring people in. So I do, you know, we talked about that when we did that production. So that she couldn't see that from my perspective. That she couldn't
Interesting.
see that this was like, yes, I get it. Your dad did not want this production. They hated Albert, the casting of Albert Finney. They
Well,
felt
yeah,
he
because he
was,
can't sing.
well, not, it wasn't that. They felt he was too angry. And he's not that angry and gruff in the stage production.
Oh,
He's
yeah, I see that.
a little more toned down. You know, so there were so like I get it. Like this is your baby, and it's not what you wanted it to be when you gave the rights to make it into a film. You know, you were hoping it would create a bigger audience for the stage production, I suppose, because I think the stage production might have still been running at that point. But for her to like not acknowledge what that film meant to me, and to not realize that because of that film, I wanted to see the stage play. To her just like being, no, it's terrible and you're wrong. You know, it was kind of,
By the way,
you know.
you are correct. It was still running by the time this movie came out. It closed in 1983,
Yeah.
the original production in January, and this came out when in 82? Hold on, I don't want to lie to the people, even though
Yes,
I tend to do
let's
that.
give them facts. Give them facts.
So the movie came out in June of 82 and the show closed in January of 83. So
Yeah.
there was a good 6 months afterwards that maybe brought audiences, but I feel like this movie is for people like your story, where I mean, that's what I feel like with musical movies. And I think I briefly touched upon this when we did Mean Girls, but like we may not agree with a lot of things because we're in the industry, we're in theater and everything, but like if it inspires somebody to seek out the show or to like get into musicals, whether that's being a spectator or being in it, like being like going for acting,
Right.
I think that that is ultimately the job
Right.
of these. And so yeah, I could see her point, but I can also see your point.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, as much as I hate that 2004 Phantom, I will always give it credit for being, you know, the gateway for a lot of people into musical theater and into wanting to see the stage production and you know,
Yeah.
and yes, I will tell you everything wrong with that film.
And you did. Well, not
And I
everything.
did, but
We didn't go
we got,
bullet point by bullet point, but we
yeah,
got
there
much.
were definitely a few things that we missed, but I am willing to acknowledge the positives as well. And
So then,
yeah, so that kind of bothered me that she couldn't see any positive at all, just that it was terrible.
also one of the big differences between the two movies that you're talking about, Phantom and this one, is that in this one they added songs. And both of them, I think they took out numbers, but in this
Yeah.
one they added songs. And like I said, We Got Annie was probably just because they're like, well, we got fucking Anne Rankin.
Right.
We need her to dance. But Sandy is still or Dumb Dog, which one?
Dumb Dog and Sandy, yeah.
They're new, right?
And yeah, and like Dumb Dog, I kind of forget about. Sandy, I really liked, I mean, at 4 years old, I really liked Sandy, the song Sandy. And I remember like singing it in my bedroom, you know.
And it is. But I'm like, they could have added NYC, 'cause
Well, I mean, Let's Go to the Movies takes the place of NYC.
yeah,
That's
I feel like that's one of the moments where they're like, oh, we're doing a movie.
Yeah.
Okay. So we can have this fully staged number at Rockefeller Center before showing
Right.
Camille.
And it's also something that was just like silly because it's pretty clear how rich Warbucks is, but it's also something that just kind of establishes him as even more rich because he bought out Rockefeller Center.
He bought out.
He bought
Yeah.
out the 8 p.m. show of Camille.
Who
Yeah,
does
I get
that?
it. I never understood that. I mean, even as a child, I was very confused by that choice of film.
And it's also just too long.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, so it's 33, right? Yeah, it's
Yeah.
supposed to be 33 or something like that. Or 33, 34. Fred Astaire.
Right. Which would have made more sense, even just given the fact that it's a movie musical, it would have made far more sense to bring in a Ginger Rogers, Fred Astaire,
Something, because
something.
it'll be awe-inspiring. I get it. I guess they're trying to also play up the love story.
Yeah, because yeah, I can't remember. I think there's a little bit of that in the stage production, but it's definitely not as obvious that there's
Oh my
some kind of
God.
romantic thing going on.
They also
What?
could have done a Shirley Temple because she's
Oh, see, that would have been perfect.
because they make the visual reference to it to Shirley Temple at the end,
Yeah, oh
but
yeah, you guys were talking about that, and that was another thing. You were talking about Bojangles and Shirley Temple. The issue with that number was that he was told he could not take Shirley Temple's hand. As a black man, he could not
right.
touch a
Oh,
white little
that.
girl.
I knew there was
That's what
some
the
sort of
yeah,
racism about it.
that was what it was. She wouldn't stand for that. And that's why she does take his hand
At like 10.
at like 10.
Get it. But I feel like it would have been interesting. I don't know when that movie came out. Do you know which movie that was?
The little Colonel, Brave Little Colonel. I was also a very big Shirley Temple aficionado at four.
So, okay, this movie was The Little Colonel came out in 1935. So it would have been anachronistic, but I feel like it would have, it could have been like a call and response in a way. Are
Yeah.
you sure it's this movie?
Yeah. Pretty sure.
Oh yes, I see it. Yes. I was just seeing her in a uniform and I was like, I don't think this is right.
Yeah, it takes place during the Civil War. That's
Got it. I feel like they could have shown that movie, and then this way, then when it comes back later, it's just like it's the movie telling us, hey, remember this reference? We're now gonna
Right.
do it. And this way, then Annie could have been like you and been like, look, it's me, or it's somebody
Right.
like me.
Right.
Whatever.
It was an odd choice, and I think you guys came up with the point that it was what the film editor or something had been
Yeah,
the film editor on that.
the
Yeah.
film editor for
So
this one was the one on that,
that's
which
like a really deep dive that nobody in the audience is going to get, but knowing that makes sense. And I don't know. I also don't know what at that time, what it was like to get rights to another film to use.
oh, it was probably the same, but yeah, who knows what was available and what they could have done. The other new song is Sign, which I think we talked
I
about in the first
love that
chance.
song. I was like watching it again, and I'm like, how do I get this into a cabaret?
I don't know why she's so against signing away a child. That is one less person for you to take care of. Because
It's
like the whole
not. It's not so much getting rid of I think there's a couple of things that factor into it. I think she just has something against Annie. I mean, she kind of talks about it. I mean, and they talk about it in Easy Street. Why should she get to live on Easy Street while we're fighting and scrapping? So they're like, she's got a very antagonistic relationship with Annie, obviously, from the beginning, because Annie stands up to her and Annie is, the first one to step on her foot. And so It's not so much that she doesn't want to get rid of Annie, it's that she doesn't want to get rid of Annie into
This
Fifth
family.
Avenue. You know? She
Right.
doesn't want Annie to all of a sudden have everything she wants while she's still stuck running this orphanage with these horrible children that she's forced to take care of. And it, you know, I mean, and you see like the whole thing with her is she needs this job. You know, when Grace Farrell comes in to and tries to take Annie, and they have this like back and forth tug of war, she's like, we just spoke with the person in charge of all of these things, and there is a line of people for your job. So if you don't want to give up this kid, I can get you fired. She needs that job. No matter how much she hates it. It's the depression. You know, God bless having work.
It's like right before the depression.
Yeah, it's kind of right.
Because the crash was in 39.
Yeah, but things were already going.
Things are going bad.
Yeah.
But it's not full blown just yet.
Right.
Because it's getting there. The other thing that I was questioning this time around, and I don't remember if I even just listened to it. It's slowly leaving my brain. After the first five songs, no,
yeah.
the first three songs, back to back to back,
yeah.
When Annie does her escape, do you think the laundry guy is in on it?
The laundry guy's in on it because this is something she's been doing for a long time. I mean, the kid, she, you guys were talking, about this, and you were all saying, oh, it sounds like everybody was trying, you know, every week one of the orphans was trying to escape. No, Annie was the only one ever trying to escape because Annie thought her parents were still alive. And Annie thought her parents still wanted her, while the other kids were like, we're orphans. So Annie was always trying to get out to find her parents.
But instead she found a dog this time.
And instead she got a dog. You know, and yeah, Mr. Bundles is totally in on it. Because if you watch, you know, Hannigan comes out and she's all over him. And he's like, oh, God, no, get away. And then the kids point out that Annie's she's in the laundry. And so all of a sudden he switches around and he kind of gives
but
a
like.
Sort of, 2 second romance to Miss Hannigan to get her into the
do
truck.
Do you think she tries out of like to escape from the hamper every time?
I don't know if it's always that. I think that's probably the easiest, most convenient way to get out of the orphanage
out.
Without being seen. You know,
Yeah.
Bury me in the laundry.
Right after they do a highly choreographed number about being 10 years old and having the worst life ever.
Exactly. You know, and like that, the cop, you know, like the cop who picks her up, the cop knows her. The cop's been doing this. This is something they've been doing for a long time.
He's
he knows
like,
exactly where she goes.
She's on a first name basis with him.
Yeah. He knows exactly where to take her once, you know, she's not like some random kid that, you know, where do your parents live and I'm taking you home. No, he knows exactly where to take her. And he's also apparently having a thing with Miss Hannigan. So
he kind of reminded me of Keegan-Michael Key in Wonka.
Okay.
In a way. Just the villainous cop in a kid's movie role. You know. Is there anything else? You said that there were some other things that we got
wrong.
Oh,
so you
in
guys
the first
brought
sense.
Up... Well, you guys brought up... and this is a historical thing. You guys brought up how weird it was to have a ventriloquist in the radio station.
Yes.
That's historically accurate.
Why?
I don't know why. I don't know why.
Why?
I don't know why. But Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy were big radio stars.
Why?
I don't know.
Why?
I don't know.
Why? Why even bother, you know, pretending you're being a ventriloquist? Like, open your fucking mouth. Who
I know.
Cares?
I don't like. I don't know what that is. I don't know. But that was actually a very big thing at the time. And ventriloquists were like a big thing. And yes, they brought the dummy into the studio and they did the whole shtick.
Why?
I mean, I think you kind of have to do the ventriloquist thing to get the sound right. I mean, but you don't need the dummy there. But maybe it's a security blanket. Maybe you can't do that unless you have the dummy. I don't know. I'm not a ventriloquist.
See, watching it this time, I thought since Annie clocks the Foley artist,
yeah,
and is about to say something but is shushed,
yeah,
if they remake this for the 17th millionth time, I wish the next time they do it, they do this scene without an actual puppet. So this way she can also be like, ah,
Right.
because that is funny. That makes sense. And then having the girls do it, I'm like, how did they know?
I mean, the
How do they know what a ventriloquist is, a ventriloquist dummy
I think like
is?
ventriloquist acts were like a big thing. I don't know
They're
why. I
not
don't know
allowed out
why.
of the orphanage. How do they know?
I don't know.
I have all the questions.
I know. I mean, there's definitely things that do not make sense.
Why have a ventriloquist
I
on a
mean, and I don't know, maybe, I mean, because Annie does talk about when they're talking about going to the movie, she said, before she came, before Pepper came to the orphanage, she actually saw a movie. So like maybe some of these kids, before they got to the orphanage,
radio? Oh, got it.
had a little more savvy about the outside world.
Where are their stories?
I don't know.
Where's
I don't
Pepper's
know.
story, a
Like
musical?
Pepper's story would be interesting because like she's like the tough and
It'll be written by Jason Robert Brown and so depressing.
Oh my God.
With Sondheim
Lacusa. It'll
influences.
be Lacusa and it'll be atonal.
Oh, no! But accurate.
But accurate.
But accurate. any other things that you wanted to call us out on from the first chance?
No, I think those were like the major things that I was just like, what are you talking about?
I mean, we're podcasting. We
Of course. Of course. And
get things wrong.
that's why I'm here, to make sure you get
That's
things
why.
right.
I mean, that ending sequence is always baffling to me because I'm like, what are they climbing?
Oh my
Also,
God.
how did they film this?
And like 4-year-old me in the movie theater, bawling my eyes out in sheer terror and panic because I was sure she was gonna die. Like she was gonna
Yeah.
die.
And
Like my mom's going, it's okay, everything's gonna be fine, she's gonna be fine, and I'm just hysterical.
I was just like, how did they film this? And I'm pretty sure they didn't use doubles.
They did use a double.
Okay. For her?
Her double was a little person, was a man. There's actually a quote from him somewhere, where he's like kind of joking about how, he's the same size she is, and she's still growing and he's not, and like how he had to shave his legs to do it.
But like, honestly, how did they film it? Because what is that structure? Is that supposed to be a that's the bridge, but
That
is
is a
it?
bridge. That's a train that I don't know where it is. but it's a one of those bridges that lifts up.
But like, did they actually film at a bridge, or did they make like?
No, that was a location.
Oh shit.
Like that movie was, everything was location.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Good for them.
Yeah.
They I was also looking because this movie didn't do that well financially, I will say. According to the IMDb box office area, the
Yeah.
budget was estimated at $50 million and the worldwide gross was $57 million. So like it made its money, but who knows if it actually made it a profit, because then you have to add in other things that they don't account for.
Right.
So, I mean, this movie potentially broke even, we'll say,
Right.
but like, I don't know. I think a lot of people just didn't like it. And Jason is still on that high horse about Xanadu killed the movie musical, and this is after Xanadu, so I guess people were fatigued in a way.
I think, I mean, it's there. There's definitely a very obvious decline in musical
History.
movie going. I mean, it was such a big thing in like the 40s, and I think it was, there was also kind of in that Depression era that it was a really big thing because it was such an escape from what everybody was dealing with.
It wasn't cheap, but it was
No,
cheap.
yeah, but yeah, and you were, I mean, like you were guaranteed to like, how, enjoy yourself, like to hear some good tunes and feel uplifted and get a happy ending, and
You know what this movie is missing? a true like historical cinema experience because they go to Rockefeller. Is it Rockefeller? Yeah.
Yeah, or what's Radio City?
Radio City. Of course they go to Radio City to see the 8 o'clock show, but I feel like my knowledge of movie going in the 30s is that they were just constantly showing something. So like
Rockefeller was a Rockefeller. I don't know why I keep calling it Rockefeller. Radio City was a little bit different because they also had a live performance before.
now it makes sense.
So yeah, so Radio City, you know, I mean, it's got that orchestra pit, it's got and the Rockettes were a thing. And the Rockettes originally started out as like free movie entertainment.
Okay, so instead of seeing like a cartoon and a newsreel, they would see the Rockettes and then see the
Right,
movie.
right.
Got it.
So yeah, so radio yeah, Radio City was kind of its own thing and kind of a different thing.
Because that's what I was I, watching this again. I was just like, where's the newsreel? Where's the a little cartoon or something?
Right.
Or
And I had like this weird, and the funny thing is it hasn't been that long. I mean, it's been a few years since I've watched it, but I actually like have like a funny, you know why I had a funny thing about why I thought there was a newsreel segment? Because the most recent stage production utilized projection and newsreels to kind of explain who Daddy Warbucks was.
interesting.
There was like newsreel footage because he got his he made his money selling munitions for World War I, essentially. He was like a weapons dealer. That's yeah, that's why I'm remembering the last revival. They had like this newsreel footage of, you know, Oliver Warbucks donates millions of dollars to the building of munitions for the war effort, you know, kind of thing.
Got it.
And so for some reason I was thinking there was actually a newsreel clip in that segment.
Yeah, I get. I mean, you probably also were bleeding that and the radio program moment. The you're never fully dressed without a smile, which I think isn't that one supposed to be like more of a dance number than what the movie did?
I don't think so.
Is this
Because
supposed to be
like
them horsing around?
because I don't even rem I'm not even 100% sure that they do a cutaway to the kids doing it in the stage production.
In the musical?
I'm not.
There is a there nope, there is a children's reprise.
Oh, there is? Okay.
Yeah,
I clearly don't remember that.
so in Act Two, you start with the second reprise of Maybe. Then you do Never Fully Dressed with Bert Healy and the Boylan sisters, and then the kids take over. So.
Okay, now I'm remembering. Okay. Yeah, but I think you're right. I think it's more like a takeover thing, not like a huge separate. I could totally be wrong because it's
Well,
only
like
now.
what's in the it's in this movie too, where it's like they're listening to it, and now they're having fun, and they're singing and dancing, and then Miss Hannigan comes in and destroys everything. Also, in this scene, okay, in this scene, I just remembered this. If you pay attention to the scenery, Miss Hannigan comes out of the bathroom or whatever, and like right by her is a window of sorts that is cracked in the middle and held together by tape, but there is a round hole in the middle. And my brain went, did somebody shoot a gun in the orphanage? And that's what that is?
Possibly.
Or
Or
did Miss
somebody.
Hannigan throw something? But I was like, that looks like it's a bullet hole shape.
I mean, there is definitely that not out of the question.
there's some other questions I have, like those poor girls in Hard Knock Life that are there's one that's like rolling around a vertical bar, and there's one that's like spinning vertically. I'm like, how many takes? How many takes? And I'm so sorry.
Right. Well, and not only that, but I'm sitting there going, you probably couldn't do that today.
No.
child safety.
No.
Because I was watching that, and I was like, yeah, that's like high up, and that's not. They would do it now, but they would like build a set. It would be green screen, and it would be like a low bar. It would be like
right,
playground.
And
actually,
they would
I think
be
they've
like
even gotten rid of
attached.
the playground bars like that. I don't think you can even do that on playgrounds.
Like, I was just like, there is no health and safety on this because cocaine and the 80s, and those poor girls must have been like throwing up after each take. Things we think about when we're watching Annie. Is there anything else you want to talk about before we get into Sharp and Flat?
I think we've covered everything pretty well.
Great. Let's get into Sharp and Flat, shall we?
Woohoo!
Sharp Flat.
So in this section, we're going to highlight some moments, whether or not we talked about it. If we liked it, it's sharp. And if we didn't like it or thought it could change, it's flat. And since this is a second chance, we're going to see if John agrees with his former sharps and flats. Spoiler alert, he does. But I have new ones, so don't you worry. Ariana, the floor is yours. What do you want to start with?
I'll start with sharps.
Great.
Agreeing with you all from the last podcast, the casting in this film is just...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Carol Burnett,
genius.
I was watching her even more closely this time around, and I've always watched her kind of closely because she's so good in this, and yeah, just there's like nothing wrong with anything she does. Like, she can do no wrong.
Genius, genius.
Yeah, you know, and like I said, this was like my first exposure to Tim Curry and to Bernadette Peters, and you know, and I loved Bernadette Peters. Yeah, dumb hotel. Did you know Steve Martin was originally offered Rooster?
I saw that, but he didn't want to do it because he was breaking up with Bernadette Peters at the time.
Yep. And just and there's the, I love Albert Finney in the radio segment. As he's drop page. Warbucks interrupts. it's just so awkward, and then he realizes he's done a commercial, and he's just and just livid.
Well, I've read it more as he hasn't done anything like that because it seems like he's very
right
before Annie. He's very to himself and quiet.
Yeah,
and is the secret businessman that
he's
knows.
A very busy man, very busy.
But like the fact that he's doing the radio show and reading the cue, the stage directions, mm-hmm. and I thought it was a little more celebratory of him being like, "I did it, I did a radio."
He was pissed because he didn't agree to do a commercial. He
Got
was
it.
There to find Annie's parents, and as he's reading it, he realizes. I just endorsed something.
Okay.
You know?
So I misread the situation. But yeah, I agree with you. It was...
Like that moment, something about that moment that I just love.
I'm not gonna lie. I didn't really watch this time around.
That's okay. You know.
But that was one of the few scenes that I actually like paid attention to. And I was like, choices are made and it's such a good
yes.
way.
And Ray Bolger is uncredited in that scene.
Ray Bolger!
He's the Foley guy.
Yeah, I saw that. What other sharps do you have?
I like some of the new musical numbers. I really like We Got Annie. I love Sign. I think that's a fantastic number. And just because like and again it's due to like Carol Burnett's delivery, Buenos Aires, you know, the Argentine.
And
you
see
know?
That. I was going to ask if that would work in the stage show, but I read that Grace is the one that goes.
Yeah, it would have to change. Yeah, Grace does more in the stage production as far as handling Annie, I guess. Handling these details of Annie.
But, like, I was going to... I don't think the song could work then. Because there's that, there is the sexual tension on Miss Hannigan's side of things. And by sexual tension, I mean her trying to get laid because she's got to get laid. And I don't think the song would work. I think it's at least special to the movie.
Yeah. I mean,
So.
which is like why I said I'm like trying to figure out like where, how can I get that into a cabaret or into a, you know, to something, because I think it would be a lot of fun to do.
You need a partner?
Yeah,
I'll
you
do
want to do
it.
it? You
I'll
want to do
do
it?
it.
Let's do it. We're gonna work this up. We are gonna work
We
this
will
up. We're gonna
figure
do
it
it.
out. We will
All right,
figure it
this is
out.
the next live podcast.
Okay, well, we have to figure. I'm gonna have to talk to you about that one off
Oh.
camera. So, but or at 3 a.m. at Club Cumming, what after you
Club coming
after
after I've had several drinks and I'm very Miss Hannigan-ish. And
and after you've belted
I
your
do
face
drink
off.
gin, so there we go.
Any other sharps?
Just overall, I mean, just because it's such a huge part of my childhood and like such a huge part of getting me to where I am in such a weird way, that it's like, it's really hard for me to come up with flats for this, just for the nostalgia factor, if nothing else. This is just such an important thing to me and to my life.
Besides just say it.
Okay, so we're just gonna go with the racism. That's
Okay.
my flat.
Because we, I
So
mean, we
my
did,
sharps and flats are good.
because we did talk about that in the last time, the first chance, where I think we all agreed on the racism of it. Because you have like the magical black character stereotype, literally magical. I'm going to take over now. I have my
Yes.
new flats. Part of me wishes that, and this is going to sound bad, but I feel
Yeah.
like part of me wishes that Punjab and the Asp, not the band, didn't have any lines, because I feel like if they were the Silent Menaces,
Like Asp doesn't really have any lines. He's got a, he's like,
he
does
has a
he?
You, it, not dialogue. He does. I
Yeah.
think he has a line in "We Got Annie,"
Yeah.
or one of those numbers. And we got Annie, or I think you're gonna like it here. One of those. Both of them have lines in it, and I was just like, why? Why? I mean, it's not. It's more like Punjab has this if I'm going to compliment this character, he has this stature about him where he's very stoic,
Yeah.
and
He's got a very regal bearing. He's
he's got
just
it, yeah.
he's got a presence.
But also he's very gentle when he needs to be.
Yeah.
So, like, we see him handle
Molly.
the kid with the
No?
guy with the bomb. We see
Oh,
him do
yeah.
that. We see him like take out everybody at the radio studio. Like he's the bodyguard. And I sound bad saying this, but because he has that stoic nature about him, I feel like his presence speaks volumes rather than
I mean,
him
you're not
speaking.
wrong. Yeah, you're not wrong.
So that's not really a flat. I guess maybe that's a natural
Yeah.
of them talking. Because then on the flip side, I want them to have all the lines, because let's not make this so white.
It was 1930s America, and I mean, not again, not to excuse it,
No,
but
no.
we are dealing with a very specific time.
But it's 1983 when the movie came out, so, or
I
82.
know.
So
I
they
know.
could have
Well,
done some things.
another thing that I learned this morning reading about the comic is at one point the writer of the comic did include a black orphan, and
Whoa.
that caused a lot of backlash at the time, and a lot of
Interesting.
Annie was actually very in World War II, Annie was very helpful to the war effort. And in that,
What?
no, seriously, no, there's like this whole thing. When World War II came about, Annie in the comic formed this I forget what it was called, but junior soldier kind of thing where they were
A junior regime?
like to collect scrap for the war effort and that kind of thing. And so because that happened in the comic,
Oh, okay.
kids in the real world also formed this same thing. I can't remember what it's called, but a junior something, and formed this thing. And then they actually were commended for like the amount of like scrap metal and things that they collected to help the war effort. And
That would not happen today.
right. And at some point there was one black orphan included. And he's like, I'm not a reformer. I'm not like trying to, but this is reality, and they're helping as well, and they shouldn't excluded from it.
Right, yeah. Look, I guess it was a form of like the audience seeing themselves, form of representation.
Yeah, he wanted to show that full representation, and yeah, it got a lot of backlash. I mean, especially for that
But you know
time, but
what? I'm going to commend him for that, for what you said, because that's at least a step in the right direction,
Right.
a step in the direction. But back to my flats. I flatted Camille being a little too long. There's too
Yeah,
much Camille. We could have.
I even as a kid, I was bored by
The movie is
that.
2 hours and 4 minutes. I feel like if we like chopped down Camille, it would have just been like a good 2 hours.
Yeah.
And then my other flat is the orphan that keeps saying, "Oh my goodness."
Duffy.
Yeah, I'm on a flat Duffy. I'm sorry, but I'm not. She's annoying. Oh my
Yeah.
goodness. Oh my
Oh my
goodness.
goodness.
But I have new sharps.
Okay.
So I don't think I really sharped this last time, but I want to sharp Easy Street because there's everything, you know, the three of them, the choreography. Like, I'm not sure if it was Bernadette Peters and Carol Burnett on the stairs doing the fan kicks
Yeah.
over Tim Curry or if they were doubles, but like, that is amazing. The fact that they are walking up the stairs while
And
doing that.
that they had to come back and do reshoots for, because originally Easy Street ended in the streets of NYC, and it was a big like crowd number.
Oh shit.
So they and like Bernadette, or Bernadette, Carol Burnett actually talks about it, because the movie finished and she had plastic surgery. And like 2 months
I did hear
later,
about
they
that. There
called
were
her in and they were like, we
reshoots.
have to reshoot Easy Street, or at least half the last half of Easy Street, because we're not doing it in the streets.
And
And
she's like,
I was looking, I really didn't notice a difference. Like I was looking for it. But apparently she had something major done, like with her chin, and I didn't notice it, but she swears she looked completely different.
But then there's also a moment where it's Tim Curry and Bernadette Peters doing like a partnering, and he's the one who's going backwards towards
Yeah.
the camera. I mean, there's no real directionality when it comes to this, but like the fact that Bernadette is walking towards the camera and he's walking backwards, I was like, that's pretty interesting because,
There's some really good cinematography in that number.
well, that and like the fact that they made it the man who's going backwards
Yeah.
is more of the reference I'm making,
Yeah, okay.
because like
Yeah.
Ginger Rogers, you
High
know,
everything backwards and in high heels, yeah.
and in high heels. Yes, Bernadette Peters was in high heels, but she was going forwards. So I also want to sharp the servant band. Is that in We Got Annie? Yeah.
Yeah. Mrs. Pugh's on the piano, and yeah.
Yeah, it was. And Anne Rankin's playing the harp and other things. Like, I was like, you got it. You get it. You understand movie. And then my last new sharp is for FDR being a music director during the Tomorrow White House version.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, he was. And I didn't notice, like, until you guys mentioned it in the last one, I didn't notice that whole thing about how tall he is in the chair.
He's like 7 feet tall in the chair. But I was laughing when he was just like, "Now me, now
Yeah.
everyone, harmony."
Yep.
I was
Eleanor,
like,
I can't sing.
so funny. Would you add any of the songs to your life's playlist?
We Got Annie. I definitely put Sign on my and like and I was thinking about it, because I haven't put these on my Spotify, any of my list. I'm like, I need to go look that up on Spotify. I had the cassette tape. Like, this is probably the first soundtrack that I ever had. And I wore that thing. I wore that thing out. Like, I actually have memories of it. I think it was during We Got Annie. I have memories of it, like, slowing down and, like, because I just played it so much.
You know? Oh, my God.
Yeah.
God bless you.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, yeah. So, I mean, definitely, like, at this point in my life, yeah. Like, We Got Annie is fun.
Sorry, God you bless know? Your family.
my poor family. Let me tell you, the way that I sang Tomorrow, because it was the only damn song I knew. I just, my first grade talent show, I sang Tomorrow, and it was like my first time like on stage in front of people. And I was really upset at the end because I didn't get a trophy. And my mom's like, my mom goes, sweetie, you like skipped the whole middle of the song. And I'm like, no, I didn't. I had like some like kind of stage fright. Like blackout moment.
You went to the white room?
I went to the white room. And because I have no memory of this, but my mom swears, she's like, you like skipped the whole middle of this.
Oh. I will never not think of Serial Mom whenever I hear of Tomorrow. Tomorrow punch, I love you. Punch, Tomorrow punch.
Yeah, and Tomorrow's definitely not doing it for me these days.
It's turning into the Scottish play. Tomorrow.
So yeah, yeah. But yeah, I think We Got Annie is just, it's a lot of fun, and I wanted to be Annie, but I wanted to grow up to be Anne Ryan King.
I don't really remember what I said in the first chance, because literally just finished that listening to it, and I am blacking it out, and I'm blacking this episode out as we speak. But I think I would do Tomorrow, the White House version, just because it's so funny.
Okay, yeah.
Easy Street,
yes, absolutely Easy Street.
Little Girls.
Mm-hmm. Especially her version.
And you know what? I want to give it to Maybe.
I really like Maybe, and it's something I've kind of wanted to arrange in kind of a more adult musical arrangement of.
Like I said, Aileen Quinn is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And this is coming from
years,
me.
Yeah, and I saw her years later. I want to say it was Saturday Night Fever. I saw her in Saturday Night Fever on tour. And I was like, giddy.
You changed my life.
I was like giddy because I knew who that I knew who that was.
Yeah. I wonder how many people have gone to her like at the stage door at meet and greets or something and has said, you inspired me to go into musical theater. It's gotta be in the thousands.
I don't think I could speak to her if I actually like met her in person. Somebody make this happen, please. Somebody get me an introduction to Aileen Quinn so I can like totally fangirl and be incoherent.
Like her and maybe Andrea McArdle because of the stage version.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I wonder how many people go up to these women and are like, you inspired me to get into theater. It's gotta be like in the thousands at this point. Right?
Right. Well, I mean, and this was the first strong girl character, really.
Right. And young girl, not like a teenager, not like a 20-year-old who's dumb.
Mm-hmm.
Annie like is 10, 11 years old. So
like something else you guys were talking about in the last episode was how she, you know, she beats up the boys.
She beats up the boys and then sings about how dumb the dog is. Yes. Right.
You know, like she stand. I was thinking too today watching it, when she's first at the mansion and Warbucks comes in and he's pissed because she's not a boy, and her whole attitude is like, it's not a problem, I get it, you wanted a boy, I've just had so many great memories being here. Like she's a little manipulative, but not in like a
sociopathic way.
Like, yeah, and she's, you know, and like when she's leaving to go with her parents, quote unquote, she, you know, she's packing and Grace says, you know, she asks, you know, can we return these to the store, because I don't want to make my parents feel bad because they're poor. You know, so she's compassionate, and she's looking out for the people less than. She's looking out for the lower people.
And this is a good moment of like adults writing for a child.
Yeah.
Where I think lightning struck and they got it right. I mean, they also had source material, but that was just a comic strip, so it's like, whatever. But the fact, like, I can't speak for the show, but I can speak for this movie that, like, the writers of it got it correct. And on that note, we're done with the episode. Oh, thank God.
Sorry.
It's so good. It's a lot of Annie. A lot of Annie.
I know, but at least this was the good one. At least I did not make you sit through 2014 again.
I mean, there's the camp factor of the 2014 one.
Yes.
And Rose Byrne not being able to sing. Ariana, what do you have to plug or promote?
She's still doing the same nonsense. trying to build a show and bring it to the people.
And maybe I'll be in it. Who knows?
And maybe. I mean, now that we know we've got sign, I think we can make this happen.
Although I'm going to look at you like Aileen Quinn looked at Anne Ranking, and I'm just going to be like, no, but I'm going to do it. Nope. Where can the good people find you on the socials?
I am Lady Aria everywhere. Usually there is an underscore at the end of it because some rude person who doesn't even use their social media account anymore has my name under lock. And someday I will get it back. But it's Lady Aria everywhere.
And if you have any answers to questions that we had in this episode, like why use the ventriloquist dummy during a radio program, you can answer them and email me at buttersongpod@gmail.com. I'm also on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at buttersongpod. Is this your definitive Annie, or are you a fan of the 99 one, which is still pretty good, I'm not gonna lie, because Kathy Bates and Kristen Chenoweth are in it. And if you want to be part of next episode's conversation, well, it's still Second Chance Month, everybody. So make sure you're listening to the first chance so you understand the references that we're making. And we're going to be talking about the Buffy the Vampire Slayer episode once more with feeling. Ooh,
which I have never seen. I know.
It's on the Hulu.
Okay, I'm gonna have to go watch it because I've actually never seen it.
Ariana, thank you so much coming back on. No more Annie, please. No more. There's only one more time I'm going to do Annie, and then that might be it. I might say no to Annie. But thank you, everyone, for listening, and bye for now. Special thanks to Aaron Choi for creating the pod's artwork and to Nick Bombacino for composing the theme song and the jingles. A huge thank you to CastBox for hosting this podcast. And thank you again for tuning in to today's episode of Life's But a Song. Bye for now, everyone, and have a musical day.